I'm Ryan.
And I'm Logan.
And you're listening to Critical End, Episode 1.
How exciting. First episode, we should give ourselves something for that one.
I got you a cake.
Oh,
yeah, it's in the car.
Oh,
yeah, I don't have a car though, so.
And we didn't drive here.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. I'm mostly lying about it. So, Critical End, cool. Logan, new podcast, new blog, exciting for us, right?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked because.
Good, me too.
What are we going to be talking about on Critical End?
Well, the idea is that we are longtime sort of students of movies. Not experts, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
Students
taking notes.
Of movies. No, please do.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Of movies. Where we want to watch not just good movies, not just movies we think we'll like, but basically any movie we can get our hands on and sort of figure out where it fits in the overall structure of movies as a whole.
Okay.
So we watch a lot of bad movies. We watch hopefully some good movies and talk about them on the show.
So are we claiming to be experts in any way?
I claim to be no expert in any way.
Neither do I.
I'm an expert on people who aren't experts, Logan, and I'll tell you that I qualify as one.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
We're sort of on this road of discovery.
That's exactly it.
Okay, awesome. So we got some intro music to go to or something before I think we've already done that, theoretically,
in the editing, in the editing process.
Will we edit this part out, too?
No.
Okay,
no,
awesome.
That's not possible.
We're recording this on a cassette deck.
Yeah, basically. It's a debt. And we're going to have, of course, as you probably already know if you're listening to this, a blog component to this where we get to critical-end.com is basically the place to go for all our
stuff.
I'll
go there now.
And, no, just wait until after the show. And
this website's great.
Yeah, no, I know. But just reel it in, rein it in. And, you know, you can go there to see a blog post by us, which mostly will be reviews. We'll probably talk about some movie news on there and other odds and ends as well.
That's more, yeah, on the website we'll do more of an individual thing. And as you'll see from this, we have... slightly different tastes in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we both like the same genres, I'd say.
Yeah.
So on the website, you can read about individual films, while this podcast is going to do sort of all of 2008.
Yeah.
Because it's time to look back.
It is. We haven't done any shows for 2008, so you don't know what we thought about it. This is your big cram session to get used to.
I am so excited.
And you can find out, am I more like Logan or am I more like Ryan? I'm Ryan, by the way. We should make sure to like keep saying this so people know our voices.
And I'm Logan. I'm wearing a name tag. I thought that would help.
That's yes, it does.
Okay, cool.
Me, because I often forget.
Is there going to be a which are you more like on the website feature?
There should
be awesome.
Go there now and see if there is. Not you.
Okay.
Them.
I was looking. I was slightly disappointed. No. I was checking Ryan. I'd like to point out
you are more
so
like
Logan
me than you.
Seems kind of like a loser.
So anyway, yes, as you said, we're going to talk about the movies that came out in 2008. We're going to do our five best and five worst of 2008 each.
Well, yeah, before we jump into that, Ryan, what did you think of 2008? Just off the top of your head now, not looking back so much at your ratings,
mm-hmm.
but anything jumped to mind as being amazing in movies in 2008?
Well, there were a lot of important superhero movies. It was a good year for superhero movies. There was, and I didn't see all of them, but there was Dark Knight, there was Iron Man.
It's one of the biggest movies of all time. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Wanted, Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm. Hellboy 2.
I actually didn't see as many movies as I wanted to this year. In fact, looking back at my list, I had seen fewer movies than I'd seen in many years recently.
We did actually kind of cram for this.
Mm-hmm. Went back and saw some stuff
which,
I missed.
Yeah, which might not say too much about 2008, because neither of us really ran out to theaters in 2008 to see everything we could.
There were definitely a few outstanding films, but I think we were discussing that it was sort of a mediocre year overall for movies.
Yeah, yeah. To get technical, I'd give 2008 overall a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, no, we rate on the 10 scale. We should
yes.
tell people that up front.
We'll get to that.
All our ratings are 10 scale.
10 being the best. Mm-hmm. And so I would look at it as a 6.
Mm-hmm. So, should we just jump in?
I think we should. Let's
go to what fifth best movie.
We'll start best then?
Yeah, we're
going
to top 5 best going from fifth to the first.
I'll let you start best, and I'll head off the worst later on then.
Okay. Well, I think the...
Number 5, Ryan's best film of 2008, number 5.
Fifth best movie of the year, in my opinion, was Cloverfield, Logan.
Really?
I liked Cloverfield a whole lot. A couple reasons.
Okay.
Effects, I think, were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I'm kind of like a guy who likes green screen movies. I mean, obviously, every movie shouldn't be that way. But
agreed.
I like to see what you can do. It's sort of the concept of the theatrical bare stage of, like, you know, no sets, and then just see how they build the sets around it digitally later.
Okay. A movie that this worked really well in.
Sin City.
Movie didn't work very well in. Same director.
Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Okay.
But you're probably thinking of...
I was in pull Spy Kids movie.
Spy Kids, yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no, I would agree with you on Spy Kids. But yeah, it's a cool, cool concept. But anyway, the movie itself was great. I like monster movies. Mm-hmm. I think this was a pretty good monster movie, competent. And the whole idea, of course, was to see a monster movie from the ground perspective. You know, one, you know, small group of people never get a good view of the monster, really, until the end, obviously. Seeing what this is like for them and their attempts to save their friends. And I thought, you know, it was really kind of cool. I liked it.
Okay, so what'd you give Cloverfield in?
Cloverfield gets an best. 8 out of 10 from me.
Wow, okay.
There were certain things that I didn't like about it. I thought you actually saw too much of the monster, even early on. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was sort of predictable. But, I mean, you know, what do you want?
Okay. Cloverfield also kind of brought back the whole thing that Blair Witch tried to, you know, tried to...
The handheld look.
Like, yeah, trying to scare us with the handheld thing, which will tie into actually my fourth favorite film of 2008, mm-hmm. which remind me when we roll back around to that. I don't know if I should give away now or not.
Well, do you want to say what you thought of Cloverfield?
Yeah, I will get to Cloverfield. You're with an 8, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
I ended up with a 4.
So you didn't like it?
For Cloverfield, yeah. And
so that comes out to something like a D+.
Not that this, because it's rare that I actually, or either of us really agree mainstream with movies. But you're sort of in a minority here. I think a lot of people did not like this movie so much.
Really?
A lot of people were brought down by it.
I sort of have heard both. I've heard like a handful of both sides of that.
A couple things of Cloverfield. It's a movie that the only plot we have in this movie is that the guy wants to get to his girlfriend who's all the way across town, mm-hmm. which is very thin in my opinion. And also, it's just like if all this is really happening, one of the guys is not going to run around recording everything the whole time.
That you have to that's a conceit. You have to accept that right up front. It's stupid. Yeah, okay. He wouldn't keep recording. Now I understand that he says it's important for historical reasons and all that. But yes, you would stop recording, especially when you're being attacked by spider things.
Okay. Yes. Good call.
I just accepted that.
Okay, however, I'll go ahead and give it away.
Okay.
Quarantine came out this year as well. That did the exact same gimmick, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Actually worked really... the camera thing worked a lot better. Because you just said that, you know, it's a movie, we should excuse that. Well, I thought it was pretty dumb in Cloverfield, but they actually kind of worked it into the plot in Quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
This guy in Cloverfield is just, you know, he's recording a party. Which is another funny thing, because we're told that Cloverfield is a government video at mm-hmm. the beginning. And I think it's funny that the government's going to sit and watch about an hour of party footage before they get to the monster attacking.
Hey, they don't want to erase anything. It's all historical.
Okay, yes, obviously. But none of that has anything to do with what happens later on. I feel like the first 30 minutes of the movie is just selling a soundtrack.
No, that's not true at all. Now, the motivation for him to go rescue the girl is in that first 15 minutes when you see that he loves her but can't tell her.
I totally
that.
Don't buy any of that, though. And then, I mean, these people are going to bother following him all the way across town just to find this girl. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they climb all the way up this leaning. They're like, oh, yeah, it seems like a good idea. We'll just go to the very top floor where she apparently lives. Mm-hmm. And they get up there, and she's pretty much at death's door, and yet she survives the rest of the film.
Now, that was one of the reasons I knocked off the two stars, the 2 and 8 from a 10. Because, it's incredibly stupid that she would be impaled by a spike.
Exactly.
Again, spoiler alert, I guess.
We'll pull you off this, and then you're fine to go.
Yeah, and they're like, well, whatever you do, don't pull it out. And they're like, well, we'll pull it out.
Yeah.
And, like, that would have at least, if not, gone through her heart, hit a lung.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, she's running. Like, she's totally fine.
Yes, yeah. She also survives a helicopter crash, I believe, after that, too.
No, that's unbelievable.
Which leads to my favorite part. Not only does the monster happens with a lot of modern-day monster movies. Not only does it sort of, like, grow and shrink during the movie, however much they need it to, it manages to hide in New York City, which mm-hmm. a lot of monsters, I guess, manage to do. But it also, during one scene, manages to sneak up on all of them. They're standing in the middle of a park, this giant open field, and they're like, look behind you!
Yeah.
And he's like, hold the camera, and it's just, I don't know, I really didn't get into Cloverfield that much.
Well, you know, those things seemed small to me in relation to how much enjoyment I get out of it, so that's all what I'll say to that. But I don't discount anything you said.
I did not mean to talk so long about Cloverfield. I'll move on.
This is your fifth best movie of the year now.
Yes.
What we're about to say.
8 from you, Cloverfield, 4 from me.
Okay.
So fifth best movie of the year, in my opinion, was Rock'n'Rolla. And this is Guy Ritchie's new film. I will say I'm not quite a fan of Guy Ritchie. I've never really gotten so much into his past stuff, and it seems to me like he's making the same movie over and over again.
You didn't like
again.
The movie where he was shipwrecked with Madonna? Mm-hmm.
And then, hold on. And then once, you know, I complained that he's making the same movie over and over again, he's like, well, I'll make Swept Away for Logan.
There you go.
For me especially.
Just for you.
And then I was like, well, I liked it when he was making that same movie over and over again then.
Yeah.
He disappeared for a while, and then, you know, I don't... it doesn't help anymore that he has this crazy tabloid life either. Apparently during... like the filming of Rock'n'Rolla, he played Madonna's music over and over on the set, and the actors talked about how annoying that was. And furthermore, another spoiler, Rock and Rolla is really just a setup for a sequel. But actually, it works
like
so well, though. Like, it's not so much like at the very end. Like, if you want to hear the rest of what happens, you have to go see the sequel.
Uh-huh.
But it works more for like a comic book style. And this has some sort of, it has animation during some of the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that cuts at the end is really cool.
Well, and, what's the actual premise of the movie? I don't know.
Rock and Rolla, it's a typical Guy Ritchie film where there's a bunch of different gangster stories going on, and they all connect together through this rock star who has an incredibly rare painting. That much like Pulp Fiction, that sort of thing, we never actually see the painting, but that's what makes it so great. Yeah,
okay.
And so they're all the pop star has faked his death. He's on all sorts of drugs and everything. It's a very funny film. It references Guy Ritchie's other films. And it does a great job. It's also his most mature film to date, too.
Hmm.
But I think I was by myself by
mature,
saying this was his best film.
Mature how? Mature in the directing or the story? Or
the directing and the story. He's grown up a lot.
Right,
exactly. It's not. Ritchie's style was always sort of MTV, cutting too fast. This, he'll linger on something. There's characters have more development. They just don't have goofy accents.
Well, there you go.
And I think it works
really
well.
Then I refused to watch it.
But I settled with the 7 on
okay.
Rock and Rolla. And I guess I'll be seeing the sequel, too.
Yeah. Also Rock and Roll.
Also Rock and Roll.
That's what it's called.
And I'll go ahead and give it a 7 now.
Yeah,
too. Why
you
not?
Might as well.
Yeah, we're fine with that.
All right.
So, Ryan, number 4, best film of 2008.
All right, for me, this was Tropic Thunder. Now,
okay.
I really was prepared to not like this movie. I wanted to like it, but was prepared to not like it because we have some really funny people like Jack Black and Ben Stiller who mm-hmm. are not reliable, as funny as they are. You can't just say, oh, Jack Black's in this movie, it's going to be awesome, because he's done a lot of horrible films.
Agreed.
But, I, you know...
Some this year, Kung Fu Panda.
I want you to talk about, because this is your theory, I want you to talk about your theory of Ben Stiller and how he works.
My working theory on Ben Stiller currently is that he'll do...
I buy this.
He'll do 5 or 6 crap films, whatever comes his way, to build up money...
Night of the Museum 2.
And yes, and the Heartbreak Kid remake,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. To build up money and a conversational, like, awesome attitude with the studios so he can eventually make another one of his own films that he either co-wrote or wrote and directed.
Which essentially is his one good film.
Yeah, exactly, which it's getting rare now. I think before Tropic Thunder, I can't even remember the last film he directed was. But I've enjoyed everything he directed, and Tropic Thunder is really no different. It's
right.
It's a very enjoyable comedy, especially. It's getting rare that comedies really get noticed as being so good, and this one really did,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
But, I mean, I think... Oh, go on, sorry.
But, yeah, I think that is how Ben Stiller is kind of swinging things.
And this really made
He is a funny guy.
This really proved that theory to me and made me believe it. I mean, it's... he sort of just goes all out, and it's like you can really lose big in that. If you go, like, so broad and so silly, you can really lose big. But, like, it just kept just enough of, like, this pompous reality to it that it was fantastic. I thought Robert Downey Jr. was hilarious.
Yes, best part of the movie.
Seeing him in this and also seeing him in Iron Man was like, Robert Downey Jr. is my favorite actor of the year.
I haven't seen Iron Man, but that is definitely one of my favorite characters of the year from Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
And he, you know, but Stiller surrounded himself by a very lovable cast.
Absolutely.
A lovable cast, and that's...
And people that you don't expect, like the guy from Undeclared, whose name now escapes me.
Yes.
Was great in this.
I did not expect to see him in it, actually.
Nick Nolte.
Main part, yeah, Nick Nolte.
Hilarious. And then everybody's talking about Tom Cruise. Now, I honestly think that that part could have been done better by an actual comedian.
Okay.
But Tom Cruise was really funny in it.
Okay. I was hoping you would take that in a different direction. Everyone has said how great Tom Cruise was in the movie, and I was not sold into any of the Tom Cruise stuff in the movie. To me, he was trying way too hard. The dance stuff was lame, and you and I had this conversation the other day that movies are sold so much now. I'm like, oh, look, they're dancing.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be funny, but the problem is, you know, one, they're dancing pretty good. Mm-hmm. Which is not funny itself. And two, I don't know when dancing became the new standard of comedy in Hollywood. I guess since every other Hollywood movie is a dance movie now, someone has to make fun of that.
But. I'm sure we'll have a whole episode in our comments of the degradation of comedy. Well, when we talk about the worst movies, we'll talk about the degradation of comedy in America. But yeah, it's actually got to the point of like, well, people associate dancing with funny, so any kind of dancing should be funny. And then the American audience is like, I accept it. Ha ha ha. But no, actually, I think that part was funny. I just think Tom Cruise, and he was funny in it. I did laugh. I just think that he's there just to be Tom Cruise. Like, an actual comedian could have done better with that part.
I agree.
By the way, Matthew McConaughey, also really funny.
Also great. Although, I was picturing, that was the part that Owen Wilson had, like, filmed 2 days of or whatever before all that stuff happened.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And it really is just Matthew McConaughey trying to play Owen Wilson, if you look at it that way. And so, but no, McConaughey did a good job. Yeah, I wouldn't trade him in that movie, although I trade him in a lot of other movies he was in. But Tropic Thunder, the best. I ended up giving it a 5. I as much as I enjoyed it, I really don't want to see it again. Robert Downey Jr. was the best part. He seemed to get all the great lines, and it's sort of like it's just, and once again, it's too simple of a premise to really go on as long as that movie did.
I don't know. I mean, I think a comedy is well served by a simple premise, so you don't have to. You know, it needs a premise and it needs a strong basic premise, but to be complex, I don't think necessarily would help this movie.
I actually liked everything else that was going on around. Like, the premise was so simple that they felt like they had to separate the characters in the middle and sort of fill in this, now he attacks a panda and kind of goes crazy in the jungle thing.
Well,
I thought that was going on a limb.
That leaned towards being a little bit overdone. Yeah.
Yes. But the best part of the movie, besides Rob Downey Jr., were the trailers at the beginning.
Yeah, that was
I was fooled for a second, and that was very, very well done. And at that point, watching it, you know, those first 3 minutes or whatever, it was a 10.
Tobey Maguire playing himself.
Exactly.
Hilarious.
Just one of those perfect comedy moments right there.
Can at least both say that if you haven't seen it, you need to.
Yes, no, I will agree with that. It was totally worth
I gave
seeing.
It an 8, by the way.
And, you know, a pretty good film in 2008 as far as comedies go.
Yeah, another thing which it might also have affected my rating. We so rarely see an honestly awesome, good American comedy. I think Hot Fuzz is the last one I can actually recall. Mm-hmm. And then before that, Red Eye with Cillian Murphy, which wasn't actually a comedy, but it was hilarious. But you gave it a 5, I gave it an 8.
So that was your 4 of the...
number 4 of the year.
My number 4 of the year was, going back to what we were saying about Cloverfield, was Quarantine.
Okay. I haven't seen this.
Ryan and I are both really big horror fans.
Absolutely.
And that being said, I can honestly say I've not seen the original. This is a remake of a Spanish film called Record, or REC.
You know, okay, right, I see.
I don't know how close it is or anything like that, but people who have seen Record say this Quarantine is just as good.
Hmm. Which is rare for a remake from a foreign language.
Exactly, right. But it was done well. What you were saying about, I don't feel like the character is like, oh no, this thing's happening, so I have to record everything here. It was restricted. It took place in an apartment building, not all of New York City. The guy, he was actually a cameraman from a TV studio, so it made sense to me that he was recording this, because that's what he was sent there to do. That was his job.
Yeah.
And that worked out really well for the movie. So many awesome things happen in it. It's really hard to predict anything. And then halfway through, it just turns into a haunted house movie, where they literally just run up and down the steps, and zombies jump out. Hmm. And it works so well for this movie, and the only problem is, and this is a common problem now for a lot of zombie films, is it doesn't bother to explain itself too much as far as, I guess...
Do you want it to? I mean...
Yeah, I guess with a lot of zombie films, it's gotten to the point now where, like, oh, it's either an asteroid or a virus. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we don't want a full explanation, but...
Well, Logan, you're forgetting that sometimes it's a virus brought by an asteroid.
That's right. But it also created new zombie rules, and very enjoyable. Once again, I don't think it's on DVD yet, but when it does come out, rent it. And I like to know what you think.
After you mentioned it, I wanted to see it.
It's one of those. It's kind of like The Descent in the way that it will. To me, it will never be as good out of the theater. It's one of those things that when you're in a dark theater that's so huge, that's when something like that's scary. While you're sitting at your house and you can pause it whenever you want to, or you know, go read your Bible. It's nowhere near as.
You know, this is an important point. You should at least pause a movie every 10 minutes to read your Bible. That's something that we all both agree on, just to keep you centered.
That's all I had on Quarantine. And,
okay.
So number 3, Ryan.
Number 3. The third best movie of the year for me was The Dark Knight. I'm a huge Batman fan. I love the comics. I liked, you know, the early Tim Burton movies. You know, I think it got a little shady there with Joel Schumacher, as anyone will probably tell you. Batman and Robin was one of the worst movies I ever saw, and I really wanted to walk out of it. I liked Batman Begins a lot. I thought Christopher Nolan had a good handle on the character, and I thought Christian Bale was a great Batman. I think this is the Spider-Man 2 of the Batman movies. In other words, they already did their origin story, which, you know, every first superhero movie is bogged down with an origin. Mm-hmm. They have to tell you how he came about. This was unencumbered with that and ended up just being an awesome story. Now, if anything, the only flaw in terms of Batman movies it has is it's mostly not about Batman. It's mostly about the Joker. But Heath Ledger...
I disagree with that, actually.
All right. Blew me away as the Joker. I thought he was incredible. I love the Joker as a character. And towards the beginning of the movie, when he... it's like the first 10 minutes, he starts talking about his quote-unquote origin. He was like, you know how I got these scars, and he tells this story. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, like, oh, crap, this is going to go downhill. Because the Joker doesn't actually have an origin in the comics. It was never really revealed. There's been a couple different alternate origins that have, you know, been stated, but nothing solid. Then, when he tells a different story of his origin to somebody else in the movie, I'm like, that's the Joker. That is, this script was written by somebody who really understands the Joker. And I thought, that was fantastic. I thought Aaron Eckhart was excellent as Two-Face. I really liked him as Harvey Dent. And then when he turned, it was very upsetting. Spoiler alert.
I think we saw that coming.
This, you know, the only thing that that keeps this from being a 9 or a 10 is that I felt like it was too long and a little bit disorganized. And there were other, just a few odds and ends that just sort of made me not... It didn't really push me over the edge to be like number one of the year or anything like that. But I was thrilled with this movie, and I think it's definitely one of the best superhero movies ever made.
Well, Ryan, as my comic book movie expert, you know a lot about the comics that a lot of these things are coming from. Greatest comic book movie ever?
Thank you for the intro. It was very
just a question. I don't know this, actually. I'm learning this about you now.
It's a good question. I think Spider-Man 2 is up there as one of the best, although Spider-Man 2 promises things for Spider-Man 3 that Spider-Man 3 didn't deliver. So
absolutely agree.
I think that Spider-Man 2 is up there. I think that Superman 2 is up there. I think a lot of these 2s are up there. But it's definitely up there.
Ahead.
Definitely in the top five comic book movies ever made, yes.
Okay. Dark Knight, I will agree, it was too long. Mm-hmm. I think I called ahead the theater, and I think the recording
was over.
I called because I was trying to figure out the times, and I believe, you know, they're always like, The Dark Knight. And then I think the voice recording was 2 hours and 57 minutes. I was like, oh my goodness.
I don't know if it's that
long. I was not
ready.
Well, that was with trailers and stuff,
okay,
too.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I was like, that's a long time to sit in a movie theater.
Right.
And I will agree with disorganized. I will say more leaning towards like highly disorganized, though. I felt like the movie's all over the place. I really will disagree. I don't think the movie at all was about the Joker. And I also don't think the movie's about Batman. This is a movie that, to me, was clearly about Harvey Dent.
Well, I agree with that, too.
I actually just watched this again recently. And to me, the whole movie seems to, like, everything's disorganized. Everything's all over the place. Then it goes back to Harvey Dent's story, and it, like, straightens itself up. And it's like, okay, Harvey Dent's really moving this entire story along.
That's the most well-thought part of the story is the Harvey Dent stuff.
No, and Harvey, and that story worked really well, in my opinion, because Aaron Eckhart completely sold me on it. He's good in a lot of stuff, too. But then, towards the end, when he does turn, all that seemed kind of like last minute. It's like, we finally got around to doing that, and then, like, the movie's almost over by the time that happens. And with a running length that long, they should have, I think, organized that a bit better, where, granted, he had tons of character development, and he was pulling all that off well.
The stuff with Alfred and the scenes with Alfred and Batman are so awesome in that movie.
Yes. Also, Scarecrow shows up randomly at the beginning for no reason whatsoever. And Batman really is like, now don't do it again, Scarecrow.
Yeah, apparently he's not the cool villain he was in the first
this
movie.
This is what made this movie unorganized and stuff they should have cut out. To get a little more nitpicky, Batman manages to show up just behind people several times. At one time, I allowed it in the movie. But this happens like four, maybe five times throughout the entire film.
The thing that Batman does.
At one point, they're having like this huge party. He shows up in the middle of a well-lit room, in the middle of a party, while Joker's surrounded by his goons. Right behind Joker. No one says anything. He's just like, what do you think about me? And like,
that's very true.
Punch.
Now, are you about to talk about the obvious plot point of that scene? Obvious plot hole, I mean, of that
no,
scene?
No, I'm sure I'm aware of it, but what is
so
this?
The Joker shows up to Bruce Wayne's party to capture Harvey Dent. Because he knows Harvey Dent's there. Batman shows up. Okay, so nobody asks why Batman knew about it, apparently, but that always happens, right?
Right, yeah.
So Batman shows up. The Joker pushes Maggie Gyllenhaal out of a window. Batman jumps out of the window to save her, and the end of that scene is like, thanks for saving me or whatever. I forget their catchy end line. Cuts to the next scene. Like, he left Joker in the middle of the party looking for Harvey Dent, who was there in the closet. And there's no resolution to that.
I didn't think about that. I was actually too distracted by the fact that they fell 30 stories. And he broke her fall by landing on a car, I guess. And both of them just strolled away from it.
That's the kind of thing that makes no sense, but I accept it because they're superheroes. But, like, the fact that you'd be like, I'm sure Joker's fine in the middle of my party with Harvey Dent.
He'll never talk about
what happens or how Joker escapes.
Well, everyone was saying that Dark Knight worked so well because it was the most realistic Batman movie ever. Or not realistic superhero movie ever. And that's why everyone's saying it's such a great superhero movie. To me, it's just like every other superhero movie. And that's why it kind of falls apart, that they don't treat it like reality. Some movies get excused for this. Like, I excuse Hellboy because it has this great cartoonish style to it already. Mm-hmm. But Batman is, to me, the most realistic of superheroes because he really is just your average guy.
Right.
The Joker, while I think Heath Ledger did a great job, and this is just from a movie standpoint. Yes, I am comparing it to something I probably shouldn't compare it to, but I felt like Jack Nicholson's Joker had motivation. We knew what he was doing. He was like he was actually a Joker. Mm-hmm. While Ledger's Joker is just a crazy guy. We never learn anything about him. He just kind of shows up and then he dies.
No, I disagree. The Joker's motivation, he makes it clear, is to
cause
chaos.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's not a motivation to me.
That's the same thing as the Joker in the comics. It's the only reason he does what he does. I mean, he is motivated by money sometimes, too, in the comics. But in this case, I think they used him very well. I mean, that should be the focus of the character. He just wants to cause as much trouble as possible.
Well, he's trying to cause anarchy, but everything seems so well planned in this movie. Batman shows up right when the sniper's about to go off, and they start shooting at Bruce Wayne instead, while Joker's covered himself in makeup and is actually down there. Maybe he has a lot of connections, but he seems very well organized for someone who's not...
Who wants to cause anarchy.
Yeah, exactly.
True, yeah.
But too long, I guess. Is it? But I will see a third one. It was a step up, in my opinion, from Batman Begins, which to me, I was complaining there wasn't enough Batman in that movie.
Well, and you know, I feel like there shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was perfect. But anyway, so moving on, Dark Knight 3, I liked it.
Dark Knight 5.
I gave it an 8.
Wait, yes. 5. Once again, another average movie of the year. My number 3 was In Bruges.
Tell me about In Bruges. I haven't seen it.
Well, this is even more un-PC than Tropic Thunder was. Hmm. They're not afraid. There's jokes about retarded kids in this. There's jokes about fat Americans. They go out of their way to offend everybody in this movie, and it works so well. It's very twisty. It's shot amazingly. And it's
you know who directed it?
I have no clue, actually. I probably should have looked into this before.
No,
I was surprised to find that this was one of my favorite movies of the year when I looked at my list overall.
You're surprised to find how much you
like how much I like this movie.
Your secretary takes all the notes for you.
But it's also, and my people do that too, it's also one of those things where you need to see this movie twice because there's a lot of stuff that's said that ties in later on that you really don't even put together until after the movie's over. Mm-hmm. Like the characters kind of predict their own fate in a way, and that's really cool.
That's always cool. I like when they drop foreshadowing like that. But, all right, we'll have to see it.
Yeah, whatever else this guy did, I'll have to look into because...
Is it like an action and comedy? What is it exactly?
I'd say it's kind of like a comedy crime movie. It's not an action movie. There's not enough action in it to call it an action film. And it's not a drama at all. I would label it more as a comedy, you know?
Okay, excellent. We'll have to see it. Alrighty, my number 2, and beating out The Dark Knight for the best superhero movie of the year, just barely, they're sort of neck and neck, was Iron Man.
Oh, yeah.
I gave Iron Man an 8, and I loved it. It's great because it was an origin movie that never got boring for being that an origin movie. I thought Robert Downey Jr. was excellent. I personally, I've read some Avengers, but I never really read Iron Man's solo book in terms of the comics. I started reading the book right after the movie, and I've been enjoying it. I think that, I can watch Christian Bale as Batman and think that he does an excellent job.
Except
I can watch.
I should point that out.
Well,
I'll agree with you on that.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about Katie Holmes too later when we talk about something else. Christian Bale does a great job. I can watch Heath Ledger do what I think is the definitive Joker. Okay. But when I turn to the comics or when I think of Joker, I think of the Joker from the comics because that's the source material.
Right.
It's gotten to the point where when I think of Iron Man, I think of Robert Downey Jr. before I think of the comic version.
Well,
he was so completely awesome, definitive. I think Jon Favreau did an incredible job directing it. I thought that the only silly part of Iron Man was Warmonger, oh great, he has to find an evil Iron Man. But I mean, that is a comic book character. But the traditional criticism of he has to find an evil version of himself applies. Other than that, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It was a great superhero movie.
Well, I didn't see this movie. I'd like to. It looked pretty cool. And I already liked this movie in the way that it brought Robert Downey Jr. back to the public. This was his big comeback movie, and that wasn't really planned so much, but it worked out so well for him.
This and Tropic Thunder sort of solidified my Best Actor of the Year award.
So I'll see it because of that, based on your recommendation, Ryan.
Please do.
Number 2 for me was WALL-E, which this is a movie it's really hard to say anything bad about. And I think it's a movie that a lot of people have seen, too, so I don't see what else I should say about it. Everyone else has praised it.
I can just say that it took me forever to see it, and all I ever heard
too.
Was
I
good
didn't
things
actually see
about
it until it came out on DVD.
Yeah, and I was like, well, it surely can't be as good as everyone's saying. No, it is. They're right.
Yeah, it really, really is. Good. It works on almost every level. I think you rated it slightly higher than I did.
I rated it a 9. In fact, it's my number 1 movie of the year.
Well, let's go into that then.
It's my number 1 movie of the year.
Okay, good job. Yeah. Wow.
You know what I like this year?
I saw that coming.
WALL-E.
WALL-E?
Yeah. Do you say WALL-E or WALL-E?
WALL-E.
You say WALL-E?
WALL-E. Well, now that you're pointing it out, I don't know what I'm saying.
No, because my sister was like, stop saying WALL-E, it's just WALL-E. And I don't know which is better.
WALL-E.
I say WALL-E, because there's a hyphen there.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Look, shut up.
I hate you. I was like, well, we're agreed on that.
No, Pixar almost never fails. Cars was incredibly disappointing. But other than
that's the only one I've ever been disappointed in, right?
But Pixar, they know what they're doing. It was visually very cool. A lot of people complained about the integration of live-action footage in the movie. Like, Fred Willard was actually there. I thought I liked that. I thought it worked.
Well, Fred Willard's great. I saw him for the first time in that movie on that, the newspaper that WALL-E goes over. And I thought it was just a cameo. I didn't think that would really play into the movie later on. But no, I think it did work too. And it worked because it was always shown on a computer screen, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. It was good. Nothing about WALL-E's bad. You know what's also good? Bernie. Have you watched that?
Bernie? Actually, I have. That is a good.
Very funny. Short. And it's awesome because it ties into the movie. And I love when they do stuff like that.
Yeah, that was good. If you have the WALL-E DVD, or if you want to rent it, watch that short. Bernie, it's very good. Yeah. Bernie.
Well, my number one of the year is a completely different film. We go from this kids' film to what's probably the
hardcore most... pornography.
That's allowed to make the list, right?
Yeah, right. Just in general.
What is probably the most graphically violent film of the year. There's not a single head in this movie that does not explode, get impaled, get knocked off, or something crazy happen to.
Okay.
And that is, here comes, Doomsday.
Doomsday.
I was shocked that this actually made my number one film of the year with an 8. It wasn't, you know, perfect in any way.
Is the movie starring The Wrestler? What's Doomsday?
What is Doomsday? Doomsday is Neil Marshall, who last did The Descent, which was really awesome film, yeah. Moved on to, after The Descent was sort of like this low-budget indie film. You can tell it's very restricted as far as the sets and everything goes. To this like super high budget, all over the place, you know, all over this quarantine area town called Doomsday. And pretty much what happens is it starts off as a zombie film.
Yep.
It turns into Mad Max. And it becomes a Renaissance film.
What?
They're actually fighting in knight's gear with swords and everything.
Is this the fountain of zombie films?
Yes, it really is. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, try.
But that's actually too much of an artistic comparison. Doomsday in no way tries to be artistic. It does not even try to appeal to anybody, to be honest with you. You can tell Marshall's just doing everything he wants to with this movie.
Yeah.
He's taken all of his biggest influences and thrown them all into one film. It's horrible, but you cannot turn away. And it's like, and it's along the lines of The Descent too, where it's very like, it's just like women kicking ass.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, nothing wrong with that.
No.
Doomsday works, Ryan. You need to rush out and see this movie. And if you like that type, if you like, you know, if you don't mind a lot of violence and being scared and that, you know, that sort of genre, then I'd recommend Doomsday to whoever's listening too.
All right. Well, now.
But it's definitely, you know, it's for a certain audience. This is all personal opinion. I'm not saying Doomsday was the best film of 2008. I'm saying personally I thought it was the best film of 2008.
Totally. It's all subjective.
I'm hoping plenty of Oscars come its way.
Right. Yeah. Best zombie of the year. Now, much like I like a little chocolate sauce on my ice cream, Logan.
I have no clue where you're going with this.
I like a little comedy in my heart. Is there? Is that the present
here? Yes. Oh, it's the whole Evil Dead factor that whatever we can like squish, let's do it.
Excellent.
I think one part where I believe it's a rabbit blows up for no reason. This rabbit hops out and then blows up, and might be the opening of the movie. And it was totally awesome. Like I'm watching this movie now.
Sounds like Undead to me.
No, it's not as goofified as Undead was, which by the way is an excellent film.
Yeah.
To me, that Undead is the greatest zombie film of all time. Doomsday doesn't even try to be a zombie film really so much as just try to be an action film. That is just clearly someone having fun.
Excellent.
And that's what draws me in movies in the first place.
This is probably a good segue to, I'll just throw out we haven't discussed this, but I'll just throw out a retro pick.
Okay.
A retro pick of the week.
Yes.
Ryan's retro pick.
This is
pick.
A feature Ryan just now made up, yeah.
As a horror fan, I'm ashamed to admit I hadn't seen Reanimator until last night, which you both watched.
Mm-hmm.
Reanimator is like one of my favorite horror movies now. And if Doomsday sounds great, go see Reanimator.
Reanimator, no, I haven't seen it. I would sort of group it in that as far as Reanimator was all over the place of violence and nudity and
with a little comedy.
Yeah, exactly. It's doing what it wanted to do, and that's exactly how Doomsday was.
And of course, the mother of them all, Evil Dead or Evil Dead.
Exactly. Too. That's what it all comes back to.
Right.
And he was obviously a fan of Evil Dead. Neil Marshall was obviously a fan of Evil Dead.
Right.
And it shows.
All right. Well, that's it. Those are our top five now. It's not a
fun
year.
Stick around. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah. Let us discuss the five worst movies we saw this year, which I think are even more fun to discuss.
I don't want it to seem like too much like I was attacking some of your choices, but I have more fun discussing the bad aspects of movies than I do the good.
We are big fans, we should mention, of bad movies. We're Mr. Science Theater fans.
So, exactly,
we love the idea of bad movies. And
we purposely rent them. I mean, we go to stores and look for bad movies.
I own a few movies I hate.
So do I.
Roadhouse, my friend.
It. Yeah.
But...
Oh, dear.
I know. $5.
no excuse.
No, you're right. So, no, it's always fun to look at the movies that are absolutely horrendously awful, and I think we should do that right now. So, would you like to start this list?
I'll start with one that everyone said was not awful in any way.
This is your fifth worst movie?
This is my fifth worst movie of the year. But Jack Black, once again, with Be Kind Rewind.
Okay, I've not seen this, but I wanted to.
Well, to be honest, I didn't quite want to see it. To me, I never saw it in theaters. It looked like something I could watch on YouTube, and that's what the whole movie was. And that, to be honest, that's pretty much the whole movie. It's once they kick that plot off, it's very stupid. The movie, it doesn't even try to make any sort of sense whatsoever. And granted, that might have been what he was going for, but doesn't work in this. It might have worked as a short film, but doesn't it all work?
Is it just a series of sketches ultimately, or what is it?
For the most part, Jack Black doesn't even try in this movie. He's just Jack Black. At the very end, they're like, let's make this movie sentimental all of a sudden, and it's not.
Shaun of the Dead effect?
And it's just, yeah, kind of. I don't know what else to say. To be honest, I've kind of blocked out Beacon Rewind. It ended up with the two, which means I found something appealing in it.
It's not a one.
Sure,
that's the best
was.
Thing you can
yeah,
say about
exactly.
It. I like Mos Def.
Oh, so do I, especially in Hitchhikers.
Yeah.
He's great in that. Be Kind, Rewind it too. Ryan, once again, I'd like to hear what you think if you do see it.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah. I'll read that on critical-in.com.
Yeah, any of these movies that Logan has seen that I haven't or that the other way around, we'll probably get around to seeing and we'll post a review or at least some comments on critical-end.com.
Okay.
Anyway, my fifth worst movie of the year, which is one that I'm very excited to talk about, Mad Money.
Okay. So didn't see it. Okay, here we go. I'll take it this time.
Okay, so you can take it right now. Are you taking it?
Yeah,
good.
I'm waiting.
This is one of the movies that I saw when it became clear that I hadn't seen many movies this year, as I was discussing.
This is a movie for people who haven't seen, who don't watch very many movies.
And I thought, I haven't seen enough movies. I'll just see some stuff regardless of what the quality of it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mad Money, I wanted to see because this is supposedly the movie that Katie Holmes did instead of The Dark Knight.
That's right, exactly.
And it's probably her last movie for a while because, Tom Cruise and his mental mind raises, preventing her from doing
the basement
movies.
And the chains and
whatnot. Right.
Yeah.
So, Mad Money, of course, is the story of Katie Holmes, Queen Latifah, and Diane Keaton.
So not there.
Robbing federal, I don't know what you call it, it's the place where they destroy old money before they print new money and put it in circulation.
Sounds pretty mad.
Yeah, so they work there and they're going to rob it. And it is just awful. Just really just bad. Ironically, Katie Holmes is not nearly the worst part of it. I would say the worst part of it is Diane Keaton, who is a great actress, but the only part she now takes is Diane Keaton's old and doesn't understand technology.
Yes.
And that's the only thing that this is like the complete focus of this movie, basically. The whole time she's like, she's rich, but she doesn't have any money because her husband loses the job. So she's used to being pampered, and now she's like, oh, I don't know how to work my fax machine, or like, I'm taking this job where I have to clean things. It's funny.
Dear.
And she's played up as a fool the entire movie. And then, spoiler alert for Mad Money, at the end, her secret awesome plan saves everybody, and that's supposed to be great. Like, what if she suddenly became smart at the end of the movie? Queen Latifah is just Queen Latifah. Not interesting to watch at all. Not a good actress, but not that offensive.
Because I'm usually offended by
her. I was offended by her in Chicago. Katie Holmes is actually one of the better parts of the film. Like, I kind of buy her performance. I mean, she's kind of dumb, but like, that's the whole point of her character.
I actually never had a problem with Katie Holmes acting so much.
Yeah, I did in Batman Begins. Katie Holmes double slap. But anyway, the actual highlight of the film is Ted Danson, surprisingly, playing Diane Keaton's husband. He's sort of like, they're just like goofily walking around the background of scenes and making comments. It's absolutely fantastic.
Okay, well.
Anyway, truly a horrible film that actually makes no sense from a story perspective, isn't interesting, and should never be watched by anyone. Logan?
Mad Money. My number four worst film was The House Bunny. This is should not surprise anybody. Happy Madison production. When you see that come up on the screen at the beginning, you should turn it off instantly.
Yeah.
Anything Adam Sandler's behind. It's also a movie that kind of teaches you that these kids, there's a sorority that's made up of a bunch of nerds. This is a recycled plot from the 70s, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, these college films really haven't changed that much. Of female nerds, right? Mm-hmm. And so, the Anna Faris, correct?
Anna Faris, yeah.
Her character shows up and she's like, well, if you all dress like me, you'll be popular and get guys. And that's exactly what happens.
That was so the lesson learned
from the movie, pretty much. It also, Colin Hanks. I still like Colin Hanks, and I don't know why he does this. And he was good in the movie.
I was the only one who liked Orange County.
Yeah, it's true. Colin Hanks, I'm always happy to watch Colin Hanks, but not so much here. He does make the movie a little more watchable, though, and so because of that, it gets a two.
Well, that's nice to know that Colin Hanks did something for this movie.
Yeah, exactly right.
But sad otherwise. So, in other words, there's nothing that make it different than any other college movie.
No, yeah, and there's no reason to watch this movie. And,
not funny?
Not funny. I've told you this before. Anna Faris, to me, seems so wasted. She seems to me like she has good comic instinct. She's okay on the eyes. But she keeps getting stuck in
these... Got great gams.
She keeps getting stuck in these same roles over and over again.
She was good in Just Friends.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right. That was a good example.
Where she played someone slightly different. Second, or rather fourth worst movie of the year is Meet Dave. Now, this one's a big disappointment. Meet Dave looked pretty bad. This is where Eddie Murphy is a spaceship controlled by Eddie Murphy.
Oh, starring Eddie Murphy?
Starring Eddie Murphy.
And Eddie Murphy?
No, this is depressing because it was written by Bill Corbett. Now, Bill Corbett was a writer and portrayer of, during the final seasons of the show, of Crow T. Robot from Mystery Science Theater.
Logan. Oh, Ryan, you're bringing me down.
I know. Bringing me down. Bill Corbett is a very funny guy, and he's a great actor, too, but that's irrelevant. So, funny guy, wrote the script with his writing partner, and it was called Starship Dave. It was more adult. It was probably funnier. Yeah. Uh-huh. And he made a comment on his blog about the fact that they said any hint of sci-fi immediately chunks away like half your audience so that they couldn't call it Starship Dave. Anyway, so they made it a more kid-friendly movie, and they got Eddie Murphy attached. I'm sure he and his team did some sort of rewrite or whatever, and it's ultimately just drivel. It's like you feel like you're not watching a movie. It just sort of goes by. You don't feel like anything's actually happening. It's completely unfunny. It's just like Eddie Murphy is an alien. He doesn't understand our modern foibles.
Yes.
He's trying to put on a shirt. Look how hard it is for him. It's like, is that really funny? Does anyone think Eddie Murphy trying to put on a shirt is funny?
I mean, I don't think Eddie Murphy putting on any of their costumes has really been funny since the 80s, to be honest with you. And it's something, I don't know how Nutty Professors took off so big. I'm getting flashbacks of Norbit now, too.
Oh, Norbit. I forgot about that one.
But, Ryan, this is also one of the 14 films, I believe, that Elizabeth Banks did this year. Was she
I like Elizabeth Banks.
Okay.
No, she was good.
I don't have anything against her. That's what I'm saying. Is this a reason to see the movie?
Not a reason, but she was good. She was, in fact, I felt like she was improvising a little bit. She tried to pull it off, these scenes. Her reactions to her reactions to him are what caused me to laugh sometimes.
Okay.
Not his actual goofiness, but her reaction. So, yeah, not a reason to see the movie, though.
She got me through Fred Claus. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, have you seen her on Scrubs? Her whole stint on Scrubs is really good.
Okay.
At any rate, depressing mainly because of Bill Corbett's involvement. Otherwise, it's a 4. It's not, you know, as offensive as some of these other movies. It's just sort of like a non-movie. I practically didn't see it.
So you said for the worst things about Mad Money, not to see it, but you still gave it a 4, which I find pretty interesting. Well, so your lowest movie of the year, number 5, your fifth lowest movie of the year, started at 4, while mine started at 2 right away. So you saw
worst movies or thought they were worse?
Harsh.
One of the two.
No, I think maybe I'm just a little more harsh to movies. Like I said, I like complaining about the bad things about movies, even movies I like.
Well, the thing is, I've seen Killjoy. I've seen Batman and Robin. These color
I saw Killjoy, too.
I know. Uh-huh. I saw Killjoy 2, too. but no, these color my opinions of these other movies.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, it wasn't as bad as Killjoy. Anyway, go on.
I understand. No surprise here, my third was the remake of The Eye, starring Jessica Alba, who only will take roles as someone who has some sort of defect.
Just
like in real life, yeah. Ryan, I know, did The Eye make your list at all?
Actually, it's higher. It made my number 2 worst movie.
Oh, wow. The Eye, actually, I gave it 2, which I told you I was kind of debating between myself if I should give this a 1. Because this was a remake that was not needed in any way. If you've seen the original and can do the comparison, I won't go into that now because there's a lot of detail there.
Well, can I just point out my favorite comparison between
the two? Oh, yeah, go for it.
Well, like, actually, there's...
You're going to the staple?
Yeah.
That was my favorite one.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, do that really quick.
All right.
Do that bit. I'll go to the bathroom.
Well, actually, my favorite comparison is the difference between the boyfriend character or the doctor character.
Mm-hmm.
In the original, he's really like caring and wants to help her. In this new one, which is a bad movie already before he shows up,
yeah.
I love that this guy, I don't know if it was his choice, the actor, or the way they just decided to write this, doesn't care about her at all.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm seeing, you know, ghosts. And he's like, you are not. I don't believe you, and I think you're ugly. And it's like, really? And she's like, no, really, I saw some ghosts. He's like, you make me sick. And it's like, I like that he doesn't care about the movie any more than I do. But I was going to say, in the movie, they want to show you, she's a blind character who gets a cornea transplant and has to learn how to see, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
She has to learn how to see or to understand what 3D objects look like and, you know, what certain things are.
Yeah.
And in the remake, they draw this out as like a whole 5-minute, 10-minute montage to music where he's talking over it like, your eyes will need to adjust. You've learned what things are by touching them, but now you have to learn to see them. You have to, and it's this whole big production piece where she's walking through a market. She's walking through this like odd set piece of like stones on a flowing river that
forgot
she has to
like
you know, that's not a good idea for someone who's been blind to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this whole long thing of like, we're American and we have to make this expensive. In the Asian original movie, the guy picks up a stapler and goes, what's this? And she's like, he goes, it's a stapler. You would know if you could touch it. Anyway.
Moving on. Yeah.
And like, that tells me everything I need to know. It's one of my favorite parts of that original movie. So it's sort of just, it's a matter of excess. There's unnecessary crap in this movie, they're unable to recapture the stuff that was good about the original.
This is another example of Hollywood thinking that we're all stupid idiots and completely uneducated on how movies, what movies already exist and how this works. because this was only one of, I'm sure, 212 Asian remakes this year. Mm-hmm. And they're, for the most part, they're all 10 times worse than the original. Mm-hmm. Not to say, actually, the original's pretty good, usually.
I meant to see One Missed Call, but didn't.
That did not make my list as the worst, but that was a 4.
Yeah.
I'm glancing at my list here. So The Eye, your number 3, Ryan?
The Eye was my number 2. Okay. My number 3 was Prom Night.
Yeah, Prom Night. We both rated this a 4, I believe?
Yep.
Okay.
Now, I've seen the Jamie Lee Curtis original, but not recently. I know
but
you saw it recently.
Also not good, though.
No, also wasn't a good movie. In fact, I think it got the same score.
It's 45 minutes of movie and then all dancing.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, Prom Night has less dancing, which makes it slightly better. Sure. But no, Prom Night is it's also a movie that's just insulting. It is like just a list of things that should be in a horror movie, and it goes down the very cliche, you know, every cliche moment, every basic story point. They just hit them all, and they get out. There's not even, like, there's no twist, there's nothing extra, and it's also completely unbelievable. I do not believe that an English teacher who's obsessed with a student can suddenly become Master Ninja, who sneaks around the building and kills people silently, and it's like the freaking, you know, Moriarty of the film.
It's actually the Education 101 now.
Oh, they teach that. I didn't even realize that. But it's just, it loses points for just being completely, it offers nothing. It's not that it's actively bad, it's more like it feels like, again, like you're not even watching a movie. It just gives you nothing.
It doesn't even try. If you want to see a good horror film this year, I said Quarantine earlier, going back to Doomsday, not so much a horror film, but you know, you're going to get the same thing from it. There's no real good gore in Prom Night. Plum Night was a pretty good film.
Right, Plum Night's slightly better. By the way, my sister wanted to point out that she watched this movie with me.
Is this like a personal note?
She
to tell you, hey, Logan.
Yeah, she wants to say hi, and also don't mention this in the podcast. if a girl needed my doll, she would go upstairs with the other girl, not wait for her to bring it back down.
Of course. That's how that movie worked, though. They were all down in prom, and then every 10 minutes the movie just sent another person upstairs.
Right. And they never came back, so they're like, well, better go upstairs again.
Someone else better go check. Number 2 for me was a little seen movie for a reason, but a very highly praised movie called August. It starred Josh Hartnett.
Oh, wait. Keep going. Don't wait. I just wanted you to stop talking for a while.
Josh Hartnett in a plot that's been run to the ground now, and was actually run to the ground in the early 90s, as a dot-com startup CEO. And he has big plans for the world, and they all fall through, and he goes all Fitzgerald character, and he's like, I'm crazy, and everyone should love me for who I am, and everything falls apart. And that's pretty much the whole movie. It's really a movie where nothing happens. It's just that he's like, here's my website. Isn't it great? Oh, no one likes my website. I'm losing all my money. I'm getting me. Oh, maybe I can redeem myself in the last minute of the movie.
Oh.
All of August right there for you.
Does he run August.com?
Does he love the month August? Or why the movie's called August.
Is it a fan site dedicated to Tommy's girlfriend from Third Rock from the Sun?
Yes, it is.
Hmm.
What a weird reference.
I know.
August, once again, something I've kind of blocked out. But if you want me to argue these points more, I will totally respond to anything you want to comment on the website.
Yeah. Critical-end.com.
I'm always up. I'll watch it again and get back to you or something like that.
Yep.
You hit number 2 with...
number 2 was The Eye for me, so what was your number 1?
Number 1 worst movie of the year, superhero movie. Very sad because this is one of the original guys behind Airplane and Top Secret. Top Secret being my favorite movie ever.
This is a Zucker production?
Yes, David was involved in this one. And you know,
which one did Ghost? Was it David?
You know, that was David as well, now that I think about it, because Jerry is the other one.
Yep.
But, you know, David sort of came back into the game with Scary Movie 3, Scary Movie 4. Mm-hmm. There might have been something else along those same lines. Superhero movie, he gets, you know, we got Leslie Nielsen back in it, and Simon Rex, who I'm liking.
You like Simon
Rex. He works
Rex.
Really well in the parody genre.
Simon Rex being good from Shriek, if you know what I did last
Which,
Friday the 13th.
Saying that, see, that sounds like a terrible movie, but this is, a comedy standpoint, it's a really good movie. And Simon Rex actually did a pretty good job in Scary Movie 3 and 4 as well.
Oh, those are horrible movies.
Yes, exactly. But he only shows up for like a 3-minute cameo in this. It's not a good movie in any way. It's the parody genre has... I know you have something to say about this, Ryan. The parody genre has come down to lots of animal humping and dancing. And that's like all we have in this movie. And that's where all the main jokes come from. It doesn't work. People get hit in the crotch. And if you're laughing at anything I just said, then you'll love this movie.
Yeah. Did all I get to say about that? That's basically exhaust transition.
I can't remember why I hate this movie, but it's one of those, this is a 1, Ryan. There's nothing redeemable. I mean, we can't even rate a 0.
I mean, we've already gone for almost an hour now on this, so I don't want to bog it down anymore, but we could talk, and we probably will on the website, about parody in general and how, like, Airplane and these great movies have not, this legacy has not continued. The parody nowadays is absolutely awful for several reasons, which we can go into. But I just want to point out that I also saw Meet the Spartans, mm-hmm. The other sort of overblown parody of the year. Better than I thought it would be, because unlike probably a superhero movie, they actually had a story they stuck with the whole time, and every scene moved it along a little bit. Now, the only reason, of course, was they were copying the story of 300 exactly,
yeah.
But it's a parody. Of course, you're expected to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem being that most of it wasn't that funny, and they did, like, they sort of just, like, stopped everything to be like, and now a Spider-Man skit for no reason, and
which
it wasn't
is pretty much how superhero movie. I mean, well, granted, because yeah. Spider-Man skit, but they're mostly skit films now.
Meet the Spartans was just barely got. It was probably my sixth worst movie of the year. Just got away from the top five, just barely.
Right. So Ryan, worst movie of the year. And as much as I hated superhero movie, I guarantee you hated this movie a lot more.
That's absolutely correct. The Love Guru with Mike Myers was the worst movie of the year and one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Wow.
If not for the fact that we've agreed in a 10 scale, 10 star, 10 whatever, numeral system, I would have given it a zero. It's not worth any of your time. It's not worth the $60 million it cost to make, nor is it worth the $30 million it made back. It is, you know, for anybody who says the Austin Powers movies got, you know, awful, boring, predictable, offensive, not funny, this is probably Mike Myers' way of making you like Austin Powers more.
Wow.
He's like, if you thought that was bad, take a look at this. The story is cookie cutter and at the same time makes no sense. It's cliche and yet innovative in its horribleness. At every possible turn, it's offensive to be offensive and not to be funny. Mm-hmm. I don't have any problem with being offensive. I like Tropic Thunder. I'm just saying it is offensive because they can't think of a way to be funny without being offensive. Of course, Vern Troyer's in it. So it's all jokes about midgets.
Oh, yeah.
I think what Mike Myers basically did to start this out was sit down and go, okay, time to write my new movie. Gets his typewriter out, rolls up the piece of paper, gets it in, gets his favorite coffee. All right, what looks like a penis? And he made a list of things that look like a penis.
It's Austin Powers.
And wrote a scene around every one of them. It is just irredeemably awful. And you watch it and it just hurts. And I turned it off several times before finally finishing so I could talk about it.
I'm surprised you finished it. Well, Ryan, as much as I'd like to think your version of how the events occurred with Myers sitting down wanting to write a story that involved lots of penises is true. It's actually not. I believe that Myers, I don't know the exact amount of years, but Myers actually went away for like 7 years, Ryan. I'm sure you've read about this, to develop this character and make it, and this was planned as his big comeback movie.
Well, the thing is,
And he started performing as this character for a while too at various nightclubs in LA, and apparently it went over really well.
I had heard that he wanted to put a Maharishi type character in the third Austin Powers movie, and it got cut. And he
probably
also,
for good reason.
Yeah, and he'd also been writing it ever since he spoke with real gurus after his father died or something like that. So yeah, it's been the works forever. You know, I don't understand what happened to Mike Myers. I mean, Wayne's World, very funny. And those are the same writing partners he still uses. Like, these people have done really funny stuff.
Well, I have to ask you this too as well, Ryan. I've not seen The Love Guru, and after this review, I don't plan to.
Yeah, there's no reason.
But after what you just said, would you still like to see Mike Myers make a comeback at all?
Depends on what you mean. I mean,
because loved Wayne's World. We even loved Wayne's World too, which a lot of people came down on. But
yeah, like if you mean a comeback, like something financially successful, I think no, I don't care. I mean, I'd like him to be if for a good reason. Like I'd like him to make another movie like Wayne's World or even Wayne's World. You have to do something better than Wayne's World to get noticed.
Exactly
at this
point. Right.
No, I honestly don't care. I'm done with Mike Myers.
I think one of Mike Myers' biggest problems, and it really started developing with Austin Powers. Was he gets bogged down in creating way too many characters. It's the Eddie Murphy syndrome.
Yeah.
He wants to play everybody, and it's not even really funny, the first character. So he just, you know, we keep getting more and more of it within the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. Love
and
Guru.
And Jessica Alba tainted that one, too.
I forgot she was in that movie, Ryan. That's, wow.
Not depressing, because she's always bad, but...
Yeah, what does that say about Jessica Alba, though, when she makes our worst... Yeah, exactly. She makes our worst movies of the year.
You know...
You're so sad right now.
I feel sorry for her a little because
I do not in any way.
You know, she's pretty. And she's pretty, she thinks that she's a good actress.
No, it's not that. She just knows how to sleep away at the top, I think is what it is.
But
I think
she's sleeping.
I think we can get sued for some of these things now.
Likely, that's definitely liable.
But superhero movie and Love Guru, two worst movies of the year. As far as what we saw.
Both comedies.
Ostensibly. Well, yeah, oh, exactly, right. Which I think that's going to be a recurring thing they see within our within Critical End. is that
bad comedies make us mad.
Bad comedies make us really mad. And we could probably spend a lot more time talking about Love Guru and a superhero movie.
Right.
But that's it.
Yep.
Top five best and worst of 2008. Ryan, any other films you want to throw in really quick? Or see this movie or don't see this movie.
Okay, everything else I saw was pretty mediocre. In fact, almost everything I haven't talked about got a 6 with a few 7s mm-hmm. mixed in.
Same over here.
Really quick, I'll say that Hellboy 2 was a little disappointing. I gave it a 7. I wanted it to be better because I liked Hellboy 1.
Same for me, 7 exactly.
I thought, unlike a lot of people, that Speed Racer was great. Well, not great, good. I gave it a 7. It's like an animated movie as far as I'm concerned. The fact that there are people in it is just a coincidence. I think that if you like the original cartoon, you'll like this. It's fun, it's stupid, it's silly, and it's visually interesting. There's no reason not to see it, but you don't ever have to see it again. What do you think of Speed Racer?
Didn't see it. I actually turned it off about halfway through.
Ah, not exactly an endorsement.
Yeah.
Get Smart, a lot better than I thought it would be, but it only gets a 6 because I thought it would be absolutely awful. I think Carell was totally cast correctly. I don't think the script was very good. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. We have to talk about this because it's an important movie.
Yeah, there's a few movies I wanted to hit on for the year, and Indiana Jones was one of them. I ended up giving it a 5. I believe you gave it a 6. Which it's still Indiana. To me, the Indiana Jones movies have actually gone down. I know everyone hated Temple of Doom. This is worse than Temple of Doom. Crystal Skull is a movie that starts off well enough, but the longer it goes on, the more and more you start to think, okay, what's happening here? And it's further proof that Lucas should not be allowed to do anything anymore.
Absolutely, and the great thing is if you watch any of that behind-the-scenes stuff, it's Spielberg showing up and being like, I didn't think this was a good idea, and then Lucas convinced me. I didn't think this was a good idea, then Lucas convinced
Harrison
me.
Ford
I
was
really
saying,
didn't think this was a good idea.
Yeah, Harrison Ford was saying the same thing, and now the movie, not to ruin anything, well, I'll ruin everything because we're okay with that.
Why not?
The movie is content and really just setting up a whole other character, which Lucas has now said he'd like to see spun off into newer films, which I guess would be Mutt Jones in the
Mutt Jones.
Something of the something. I don't know.
You know, I didn't mind Shia LaBeouf, and I didn't. I liked Marion Ravenwood. The thing is, I think that the sidekicks were more annoying in Temple of Doom. Short Round and What's Her Face.
Oh, I disagree.
Annoying than these.
See, I have a special spot for Temple of Doom. Not that it was the best.
Yeah, I know anyway, Short Round has got. I like Short Round too, but you know. I think that if...
Hey, me step on fortune cookie.
I understand. If this had been made around the same time as the original trilogy, I would like it better than Temple of Doom. Here's the problem.
Uh-huh.
I didn't because of all the stupid CG kept taking
exactly.
me out of the film.
And see, that's why I think it would have worked a little bit better if it was made at the same time as the first three, because they didn't have all the CG effects at their disposal. And when you go back and you watch films like Gremlins and some of the other Indiana Jones, the melting effects in Raiders of the Lost Ark,
sure.
It works so well because it's all actually happening. It's not some CG crap that, you know, you're like, seen it, I've seen CG before.
When you see Indiana Jones having a fistfight in a tank, he's semi-really doing it. There's an actual tank.
Not Harrison Ford, obviously, but it's happening.
Some of it is, you know. And they're like, okay, they're at least really outside.
Yeah, exactly.
if you see that jungle swinging scene in Crystal Skull, it's like, it's silly, it doesn't make sense.
And it's the
kind of thing that if they'd done it practically, I would have given it more lenience because it would have looked a lot better and I would have been not pulled out of the story.
He swings from vine to vine like a monkey, Ryan.
I know.
And then once he lands back to where he needs to be, the monkeys only hurt the bad guys because they're on his side, apparently, because he swung through the trees with them. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's the power of love. He's Mati from Planeteers.
Indiana Jones. Okay, that was an important one to hit on. I'm not seeing... I think we hit the other big movies of the year. Really quick, The Happening, which...
I actually missed that one.
Worth seeing, Ryan. I gave it a 4. But that was, once again, one of those really talked about movies, and it came out and everyone stopped talking about it. Role Models. People are still talking about this movie. A great comedy.
You liked it. David Wayne's great. So.
David Wayne is great. I've loved all his movies so far, and this is no different. Going back to Elizabeth Banks, she can really sell anything.
Mm-hmm.
And finally getting to see Paul Rudd in a main role. He carries the entire movie. It's perfect.
Excellent.
A great film, but didn't make my top five best. And then I have to point out really quick, definitely maybe, Ryan Reynolds still has this sort of new Chevy Chase thing going on, and I'm glad to see him doing. He's doing sort of all genres right now.
Is he now in his bad Chevy Chase period? Okay?
No. It was definitely maybe it was a 6, but it's worth watching for him. He's highly watchable.
Highly watchable. The only other one that's probably worth talking about is X-Files, because I was a big X-Files fan when I was a kid. You weren't, and then now got into it recently.
I could do a whole episode. I got into it because of the movie, before I saw the new movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was all built up for the new movie. I've watched every single episode. We could do a whole...
Seen more X-Files than I have.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on
But ultimately, I would say forgettable is the word of the day.
Which is sad.
I gave it a 6,
waited this long for it.
Yeah. Anything you want to talk about?
Oh, Burn After Reading.
Oh,
new corn film. Follow-up to Burn Before Reading. Yeah. And not good. It only got... it's funny because critics were actually telling the truth about this one. Critics said some really bad things about it, how it didn't quite stay together and work as a comedy, which is true. However, you know, people rushed out and made it the number one movie then.
Gotcha.
Not that funny, though.
Well, this is our wrap-up show for the entire year, but other shows will be a little bit different. We'll probably be talking more about movies that have come out recently. Mm-hmm. We'll also probably do some retro picks that we come across, like Reanimator.
I like the retro picks, yeah.
Because that's kind of what we do. The whole idea of the movie education thing is to find stuff that we missed when it came out and see and try to see as much as possible. So we'll definitely be talking about old movies, too. But I think we should tell them that they can see written reviews that we write, as well as news and other tidbits on Critical End. It's critical-end.com.
Go there. I'll have one up soon for The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes, and
which,
I...
a big movie recently when it came out, and also a remake of a film that everyone considers classic.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I will have one as well, up as well. I'm not sure exactly what it's going
to
be yet.
You'll have to see some movies.
I'll have to do that first.
Yeah.
I think that's all we wanted to talk about on today's first episode of
Critical-End. Well, I am happy.
I am too. It's going to be like back in the podcasting saddle, Logan.
It's, what does that mean exactly?
I brought a saddle.
Oh.
You know, sitting in it?
This is pretty comfy.
Yeah. It's good, right?
Does it do anything?
Well, I'm going to put a quarter in. That's all I got, basically.
That's it.
All right.
2008. In review, right there.
Cool. Subscribe to us on iTunes.
I will.
Not you.
No.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.